Blog Talk Radio.
Right, we're going to try and blatantly promote the show because of the complications we've had with groupies hanging around. Updating the name for 2015, and we're going to try and see how if this resonates a little more with the broader Masonic community. Not that there's anything wrong with the neighbors. I love you guys. But the truth be known, we want to put it out there to the entire world, and I'm just trying to get an idea of just how many people that are out there that might want to have a bit of a chit chat with us, you know, want to look over our shoulder or lean in on what we're talking about. So. The last figures I had were about 3 million of us, right? And I say that with a question mark for all of the, the foreboding and forbidding types of topics that come up on the internet under Freemasonry. Better that we know all of this, I say, than it be carrying on behind our backs or. Let's throw a little light on it. If you think that there's something valid and purposeful in your criticism of the craft, then we deserve to follow up on that. And as you heard a couple of weeks ago, we know where that whole notion of not responding to our critics comes from. That was not something carved in stone or something constitutional. It was a suggestion of a fellow. And I wouldn't go over that if you want, but this is like the start of the new year. This is the fourth day of the year, 2015. So we're well on our way. The program is known as the Masonic Exchange of ideas, exchange of information, exchange of points of view, and. I wish all of you sincere prosperity and good health for the upcoming year to you and your family. And we already know that we'll face trials and difficulties, and sometime the path will be a little steeper than at other times. And it's that belief that if we can do lots of things to make life harder for ourselves, particularly if we don't maintain that sense of happiness about us. It's not happiness when everything's happy and going well around us. It's being able to carry ourselves in a particular frame of mind when things are difficult, to be able to walk away and be forgiving when all of the indicators are telling us, retribution and reaction and is warranted. You put down the tools and walk away. Be contemplative, control the emotion. So this is what I wish for you for the next year is to be able to learn those lessons for yourself. Seize the day, as the Greeks would explain to us. It's an exceptional year that's upon us, and in so many ways, considering all the complications that may come our way, we are always truly lucky to have what we have around us. There's no question about that. Now, I want to, as to start off the year, I want to talk to you and ask you for some, we've got some interesting music, but I want to ask for your opinions on some problems that have been, questions that have been on my mind for a while. And I simply can't come up with the answer to this one. I don't know if there is a single answer, but I'd really value your opinions on it. And if you don't mind sitting back and getting a comfortable beverage in your hand, or and those of you who are driving, get the suitable beverage in your hand, and sit back, and we'll have a talk about something that doesn't fit into the business of a lodge. I'm thinking about I've been doing work again about the two-third lodges. Two-thirds ain't bad if you don't mind me saying so. But two-thirds is really not flattering, two-thirds of a lodge. And I bring to mind that the structure, the way we've put this is nothing to do with anything. The way we've, the emphasis that we've put on masonry is that first we have business, first and foremost business, first and foremost money, first and foremost every single meeting. It's not perhaps, anything more than describing what's going on out there. So, of course, the first priority of the third, of these thirds, is business. The second is ritual. And I say that to the degree mills that are out there, that are going through the motions of producing and initiating new masons. And I, in some ways, I think that's always been the case. What do we get? About 1 in 8 that stays or gets involved of his own volition. But it's initiating a lot of fellows that don't really connect with us. And that's is happy. It's pleasant for the lodges doing it because they're staying busy. They're continuing to build a foundation. But as they get around to the far corner, what's happening is the stones that they put in place at the first corner have been removed and stacked again, so that when they come around the corner, they find this open stretch it needs to be built. And as they get to the next corner, they find that all those stones were restacked. So they're never getting to the next layer. We're always going through the process of building, the putting down that first layer of stone for the foundation. Always very correct. Good engineering, good lines, good sight lines, good location. Tremendous potential. The architect's plans are amazing. But as the boys are going in one direction, the entered apprentices are coming along in the other direction, restacking the stone, putting them back, saying, oh, no, this isn't quite for me. I've got, and they're all, the boys are very polite about it. I've got time commitments. I've got children. I've got a job. I've got whatever. Always very, very polite. But the outcome is essentially the same kind of, candor and honesty that makes me say that our priority is first business, because that's, as you know, the very first item in lodge activity. And after we secure the sacred space, we make sure that we have that proscribed and ritualized space in which something is to happen. It's been created for us and protected for us by the Grand Lodges since the inception of Grand Lodge. And the core masonry has been going on a long time before that. And just set aside the sort of fabrications of James Anderson, the stuff that he just spun out about in that first constitution. He just made stuff up, is what happened. People cling to that like it's gospel. Well, you want to check the history of that one? We've already been through that on Masonic Companion. Now the new version of the Masonic Exchange, we're going to try and continue on with that, adding new information and probing some of these questions. So The second part of the second third is ritual. The upside and the downside, it's a preoccupation. And for the lodges that don't have ritual, we often will see the boys looking around at each other saying, if only we had a candidate. If only we had a candidate. So it's like, instead of realizing the richness of what those lodges have when they're not preoccupied doing the routine work of ritual, they can perfect the study of Freemasonry. But do they do that? They don't see the opportunity. The third part is the spirituality, the sacred lodge, the learning, the discussion, the debate, where we actually start to work with these ideas and try and digest them through conversation, through debate, through friendly discord, where the opinions start to be stretched out and examined. Now, that's the part that I think has been very... we've been negligent about it, I think. I'm not going to speculate right now on why that is, but we have been left that off. So I think a lot of the lodges are function on two-thirds capacity. And I think, to be in my own humble way, that the third part is one of the reasons why people are walking away. We make it kind of easy. If you go to a meeting and all you hear in every meeting, it's that rote. It's not like you're hearing the greatest singers in the world performing in front of you. It's like the same plodding process. And at the end of it, it's like, who cares? Do you tie up an entire meeting? Who cares? Well, we've delegated all of that to our wardens and the master of the lodge. We have a responsibility to be informed about what's going on, but every single meeting, to start our meetings that way, has over the years had an influence on our thinking about how a lodge functions. And I'm up on my back legs saying exactly the same thing. The bills have to be paid. That's important. We have disbursements that have to be made. We have charitable donations that are necessary. And how's that working for us? Take a look around at the condition of lodges, eh? Where lodges had to be told to have insurance, had to be told to upgrade their systems. And the thinking in the lodges was very, sadly, very meager. It was done in a lot of places reluctantly. And the starkness of that was, this isn't worth investing that money to upgrade this building. So our behavior suggests that we're negligent and that we just don't care. The staircases that are too steep, that are with the treads that are worn, the substandard lighting, the sanitation that has been neglected. It's always been there. Well, is the best that we could do to run a hunt camp? Well, I've seen hunt camps and they're in good kit. I don't see anybody being negligent. If you go into most Masons' homes, their places are right and proper. They show pride of ownership and care and concern about maintenance. But truly, if you look at, we have to pull out the shining stars to say, well, let's distract the conversation and look at that. How many are in that kind of shape? The buildings that are functioning, the lodges that are functioning without a plan. And so if we look, the honesty of what we see is very uncomfortable because it'll make the speaker unpopular. So rather than do that in your lodge, you don't need that. A bunch of grown men getting up and sticking their chests out and beating on them, saying, well, this is the honest way, and other people being quite sheepish about it and self-conscious about it, we're saying something that's the obvious. Does it need to be said? Hell no. What needs to be said is what we're going to do about it. Talk about how it affects us. and what it does to our mindset every time we walk in. Well, some you go into some mechanics' garages or some craftsmen's rooms. The place is chaos. Tools are neglected. Now, they're left where they were last used. And you go into other places, the room is immaculate. It's spotless. Now, if I put this to you, I'll put this question to you, which one of those rooms produces ingenuity? Hard to say. Which one is pretentious? Which one is looks negligent? That's pretty easy. But where do you learn the most? Well, what's the balance between something that's surgically clean and hygienic or something that's just a dog's dinner, you know, things everywhere? Depends what you're comfortable with. It depends what you're doing. If you're producing true genius, then whatever way you handle your material is right. If you're producing crap and promoting it as if it's genius, then you're wrong. Real simple. So what are we doing about with the lodges? I suggest we just sit back a bit and think. Everything about masonry should be done with some deliberation. The contemplative mason, not the one that wants to speak because he disagrees with what's being heard, but the one that's trying to piece it all together, the one that's trying to make sense out of it. And we see this happening all over the world. We see lodges in Britain where the ritual work has slidden, it's been let slide, where they need a reinforcement. Well, there's always people that will come in. There's always good masons that will come in, either do it for that lodge or go and supervise and mentor to make sure that even though we're not using the tools, we're always ready. This is where our vigilance is important. We always need to be at the ready. And in different settings, it would strike us that it's important, even though we're not in a head-on collision every time we get in the car, we click on our seatbelt because the consequences are dire if it should happen. But we do that without a second thought. Most reasonable men, sensible fellows do that. And yet we don't apply the same kinds of rules when we get together. And this, I think, is because of expectations that were unintentionally developed into those horrible local traditions. We've always done it that way. If that's all you've seen, you don't know any better. And if that's all you've been taught, you don't know any better. So, and it's not everybody's forte to be doing research. And, you know, if we get one answer, you'll hear fellows just say, well, that's the answer. Well, you have to do quite a bit. You change your perspective quite a bit to realize that there's a lot of conjecture. There's a lot of falsehoods. These myths have been generated for whatever reason, whatever the motivation, by the brethren and by people, the pretenders, people that make up stories and like getting away with that. And then we have to sift through this thing called fact. Wow, just amazing. So here, that stuff is fairly, that's the mechanics. Get your artificers in the room. They'll figure that stuff out. I have great, great faith in those people. But I want to talk to you about how I think masonry has been lost in time. Yeah, we're lost. Humans have an interesting ability. Our brain, you and I, it's not personality, it's brain. We can fill in gaps on our own to make sense of what we experience. Think about what happens when there's eyewitnesses to an accident. We discovered that when we took down the statements of what happened from all of the witnesses, they didn't add up. if there was they were describing the person, the details of those descriptions were completely inconsistent. And what we began to realize, the theorists began to realize and help us to understand this phenomena, was that the so-called eyewitness was invalid. Now think about how much damage has been done. How many men and women have been put in prison because of eyewitness statements that went unchallenged? If I saw it, that must be the way it happened. Well, between your eye and your brain, something's been going on. So we're seeing a lot of things being corrected. But it means that we make rash judgments. And when we don't completely have all of the facts, all of the information in front of our minds are so fast that they'll rewire and plug it in. It's almost like somebody getting to a certain point in the sentence and then you finishing it in your mind and walking away with what you think fit into that experience. It's more complicated, a lot more complicated than that. But we have this capacity, I'll call it a capacity, and we fill in the gaps to make our sense out of what we experience. So when we experience something irrational, our minds are still functioning on a rational level. We'll talk about that later when we talk about the occult and the alchemists amongst us, and the fascinating part of our history. When Aristotle was pondering the universe, he described a relationship based on what he knew. You know, look around, what do we see? We call it geocentric. It lasted until the 16th century. Mathematician Copernicus determined the sun was at the center. The earth was centered. The sun, moon, and planets circled around it. Brilliant. But today, if we dissect brilliance, we can put ourselves to the task of finding flaws. And oh my goodness, we come up with something. To the Renaissance mathematician, those orbits were perfect circles. But the German theologian come astronomer Johannes Kepler began redoing the mathematics and noticed the effect of universal bodies was pulling and pushing as if the planets were suspended by gravities in perfect balance. We can forgive Copernicus for thinking we did orbit the sun while all the other planets continued to orbit us. Yeah, that's what he was after. He theorized. He subscribed to the idea that we orbited the sun. But the question that we think, oh my goodness. But then he said, well, all those other planets still orbit Earth. You know, okay, we're there. We got the idea. He fed us what we needed, a sense of perfect symmetry. Those orbits were perfect circles. Because remember, up until that time, well, up until the 14th century, really, you know, that great interruption, the end of the great interruption, the religions determined explanations. And we still see this lingering around us to this day. Heaven is above, hell is below. Heaven and hell, a presumption that these exist in physical embodiments. The people that we're talking about, the Messiah, the Savior, is somehow translated into something human. Well, it's so that we can relate to this, even though the same material will show us that this is something beyond our capacity to fully understand. And then they give us these, oh my goodness, incredible tasks about finding the great creator existing inside of us. God. Man in the image of God. Fascinating. Just absolutely fascinating. But those perfect circles were the symmetry that we needed. Surely it was possible the way humans behave is like that too. Right? So Kepler tells us about, well, the orbit is, in my words, stretched on one end and truncated on the other. You know, as and he noticed that as the further you became from these bodies, this large sun, the less the intensity of the influence. But then we begin to realize of things like the catapult effect, and then we begin to see that everything's moving. And add to that the work of the molecular scientists who say what we see in front of us as a solid is actually at a molecular level in a constant state of motion. And then we close our eyes, good Masons that we are, and realize that everything around us is in a state of movement, that the air that we breathe is really like a fluid, isn't it? That the planets are in a state of movement, that you and I are in a state of movement from being born to being this way we are this day in the moment, in this state of mind, always the Mason in us saying, we deserve to be in a state of calmness, a state of contemplation, a state of understanding, not standing still, being a bastard because somebody has said something untoward, something offensive that's offended our, you know, our massive sensibilities, my goodness, that fragile bloody ego, but truly understanding how it fits together and what our place is in it. Do we have any influence? We have great influence on ourselves. The question I like to ask lately is, how's that working for you? You happy? You pretending? You faking it to yourself? Faking it to the people around you? Or you do what Carl Jung had suggested to us. When you go to sleep at night, ask to be in your dreams, able to discover your true nature and accept it. Fascinating, you say? Able to guide your dreams? Never did it. So don't say it can't be done just because you haven't done it. These things are possible, and we learn great things every day, but remember that we are these fragile little creatures. We make mistakes. We have idiots declaring war for no reason. Well, there is a reason, but it's sickening. It's about profit and a sense of world domination. It's morons. Then history will judge them accordingly, as it always has. You know, the despot and the dictator and the autocrat, they always are judged for what they truly are. Eventually, truth comes out. So, do we want to be answerable to an objective truth or a subjective truth? Something outside that imposes an authority or a consequence on us? Or that we realize that we're accountable to ourselves? If we need a more generous, full, and accurate view of the world, if we think that that's important to us, then the question is, how are we going to achieve that? The world around us is not going to change. The environment is not going to change. Human nature is what it is. We're always going to have reason to be a silly bugger. Always. The work is to prevail in spite of that. We leave certain work to certain people. There's work that's for young men and young women to perform. And there's work for old men and old women to perform. We all have a place. Now, in terms of self-improvement, Masonry took away something and replaced it. It took away the guidance of religion and replaced it with ethics. No wonder the religious powers of the world were so upset. Instead of being able to translate and basically tell people based on a belief, we became to rely on fact, provable fact, not the observation, because we know that can be flawed, can't it? Our minds are like that. So the question is, how do we really know what's going on? Pay attention. Pay attention. Use the calmness of your mind to start to look at the options. See the world through the eyes of another man. I didn't say these teachings that have come down to us through Masonry aren't necessarily easy, are they? If you truly want to know and understand what's going around, you should begin to look at the world through the eyes of another person. Oh, this is tragic to ego. It's like the debating clubs at Oxford or Cambridge, where you toss a coin. Here's the topic. We toss a coin, and the coin toss determines what side of the argument you're on. Law school does this. It's not what you think is your opinion. It's whether you can argue the opinion that is given to you to argue. For or against? And are you articulate? Do you have the mastery of rhetoric? And hopefully, yeah. Sad that a Canadian icon of that, Eddie Greenspan, has passed away. But he left an incredible legacy. The true spirit of Canada, I hope. Can we take the laws that govern the universe, the space and the orbits, influence, and can we apply it to human behavior? And then I say to you, is it possible that we behave according to forces that we may not understand and may not be able to see? And that the symmetry of right and wrong, for example, is an illusion. Oh, the hard part, the ethical question then, is it possible to be right and wrong at the same time? A Mason, a true Mason, will explore that question. Did we all become enslaved or liberated by science? You can figure that one out, can't you? What did it do for us? Science has always been moving along. The facts have always been there to challenge belief systems, always, in some way. But now we are able to articulate. We're able to share and communicate that information. As Masons, we not only did that, we organized. And you know, you want to hear brilliance, Masons came up with some of the first barcodes. Oh, yeah. What happens when we see each other? We put out our hand. We can identify the product. That's the first barcode. Yeah. We don't walk around thinking that way. But that's exactly. And what do? Quality control, consistency. Head over to Edmonton, and I can identify, and people can identify the quality and the who. They know who I am and what I'm up to. And the objective part of it is it's this barcode that allows that to happen. It's the math, the handshake, the response that I give or that I initiate. And the expectation that goes with it. Now, could you fake it? You mean, could you be a great big liar and have some malevolent need to do that or to see if it works? I suppose. Think about that. Somebody's trying to pull one over on you by giving you a smile and a pat on the shoulder and a friendly, sort of almost Masonic handshake. Boy, that would make the world a worse place, wouldn't it, if everybody did that? That's the whole matter that we should encourage ourselves to perform matter is to take the principles and ethics of Freemasonry outside the lodge. But if all we're doing is defining a lodge as the business and minutes and the ritual, we couldn't possibly take those outside the lodge, which may explain the kind of situation that we see. Now, I don't mean the 19th century nonsense about where we went overboard in upstate United States and brought about the anti-Masonic movement. I'm not talking about that. That was just sheer hubris. I'd like to say that it was them and us, but it was us. People were quite fed up. The public were quite fed up by the chauvinism of the time, and have made sure that that's not going to happen again. Sad that we did that. But do we walk around trying to repair that? How in the world do we repair history? Through our behavior. 2/3 lodge is going to get this there? You tell me. You tell me. I'm not Hiram. Oh, no, I don't want that. This is the 4th day of the year. This is the 11th day of Christmas, isn't it? Where do you go with this? The 11th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me. Remember? 11 pipers piping. There's a biblical meaning behind this day. Pipers piping represent the 11 faithful apostles that did not forsake the faith like Judas did when he betrayed Jesus. Some would say Judas was the most beautiful because without that betrayal, we don't have a martyr, do we? Yeah, twists our simple belief system into a little bundle when we talk about how he sacrificed. It might have been Judas had sacrificed himself for that whole function. Faithful, such a tiny word, it means so much. We all want a bit of faith in our lives. We want our mates to be faithful, our family to have faith in us, and we want to have faith in our ability to make the best decisions. So Christmas, is it over? The stores, it's all about money, isn't it? Yeah, it's all about business. Christmas time seems to be all about faith and love and happiness and cheer. People seem to be at their best for the most part, and families appear to practice a little bit of patience around this time of year. But use this time to reach out to people in your life that you haven't spoken to in a while. Visit people that you haven't seen for a while, that seem to be alone for the holiday. Volunteer. Take this magical time of year and spread a little faith and cheer to everyone you see. You never know who you may touch with just a simple Merry Christmas. And when it comes from a Mason, I'm sorry, but it's expected. Yeah, it is. It's expected. So give it a shot. 11th day of Christmas. 11 pipers piping. The story that we're talking about, the article that I'm talking about, is about math, what science did for us. So do we forgive Copernicus for thinking that we did orbit the sun while all the other planets continued to orbit us? Well, he was making it the best explanation with what he had. Or do we recognize Johannes Kepler, German mathematician, the first physicist? Yeah, okay. Do we respect him for stretching and pulling our perfect circles into shapes of perfect balance with facts? Is it possible to look at the craft as forces and influences? What forces do you see in masonry? What is at the center? Is it imperative to find perfect circles or perfect balance of forces? Again, you remember, we're in this whole frame of mind of Masonic Exchange dealing with utopia. Are we chasing this utopia, a fool's paradise? Well, We've been talking about an article that I think has been one of the most astounding articles that I've ever had the pleasure of discovering. That really does bring a great deal of Freemasonry into balance, into view. And I'd like to continue it a little bit because, you know, for the obvious reason that it benefits us all. It benefits us in terms of chasing away some of the myths and validating some of the things we may have heard. So I'm going to continue today to talk about the link between, you know, our social structure and the church. And this process known as advowsment. Advowsment. Yeah. It, and I want to explain that. I'll just give you the meaning of the darn thing, okay? It's in, particularly you're going to find this in British and World English dictionaries. It's the in ecclesiastical law. It's the right to recommend a member of the Anglican clergy for a vacant benefice or to make such an appointment. And it starts in Middle English in the sense of a patronage of a religious house or beneficence with the obligation to defend it and speak for it. Okay, this is advowson. Advowson, yeah. So I want to talk to you about that. In England, the links between the upper classes, England being at the time one of the most class-conscious countries to ever exist, and the church through the practice of advowson, you know, making those recommendations that a member of the chosen few, the Anglican clergy, to take a vacant benefice. That's simply saying it's a permanent church appointment, and usually it was for to be a rector or a vicar. And there was property and income provided with respect to the pastoral duties. So this refers to that period, the practice of advowson, between the links between the upper classes and the church through this. The upper classes would make those recommendations and the church would respond. But the Catholic revival of mid-century and the emergence of nonconformism left little room to tackle perceived threats from organizations like Freemasonry. Left little room to tackle perceived threats from organizations like Freemasonry. That changed as Freemasonry spread across the empire, and by its readiness to accept men of all faiths, was perceived to constitute a threat to the plans for hegemony of the various churches. In this way, the pursuit of a Masonic utopia, a vision of a world of genuine equality based on brotherly love, relief, and truth, found itself threatened by the very agencies whose finest principles it espoused. Brotherly love, relief, and truth. Yeah. Yet, England bred none of the rabid anti-Masonic movements like those in France, prompted by Leo Taxil. Remember Leo? Little lying piece of crap. Originally designed not to shame Freemasonry, but to embarrass the Catholic Church. Oh, his name, by the way, wasn't Leo Taxil. He made that up. Or any of the movements in America which followed the Morgan murder. Although the activities of Jack the Ripper did attract Masonic slurs. On the other hand, the craft did attract a substantial body of ridicule, criticism, and fantastic invention. The craft also seems to have attracted some interest among the socially aware elements of 19th century society. The Royal Antediluvian Order of Buffaloes, it had no royal warrant, nor was it antediluvian, took shape around 1820. Growing from a drinking club based on a gathering of theatrical employees who were envious of a Masonic lodge, the Drury Lane Playhouse Lodge, catering for actors. Their traditional ballad was entitled "We'll Chase the Buffalo." Their principles were non-denominational and non-sectarian, and their aim was support for widows and orphans. Although their organization, terminology, and language suggest a Masonic influence, there is no evidence of a broader vision nor sign of a greater goal. Rudimentary knowledge of Freemasonry may have had some influence on the early lists of members, which claimed as Buffs, Noah, Solomon, Samson, Brutus, William the Conqueror, Richard the First, and Sir John Falstaff, among others. Buffs. In like manner, William Preston had concocted a spurious pedigree for Masonry in the 1770s. If the account of a Buffs initiation ceremony, as recorded in Pierce Egan's Finish to the Adventures of Tom and Jerry and Logic in Their Pursuits Through Life in and Out of London, which was published in 1829, bears any resemblance at all to reality, there was a marked lack of dignity and decorum among its members. The same could be said of the Order of the Moose, initially also a drinking club, which was founded in America in 1888 and reached England in 1922. Again, the focus was charitable care for widows and orphans and the provision of support for community ventures, but without a greater vision. It was as if good deeds brought their own reward. There were other look-alike clubs, such as the Elks and Eagles, all with broadly similar aims and all lacking a broader vision. The Victorian sailor also cherished a renewed utopian vision. This was known as Fiddler's Green, a safe anchorage, a place where mirth abounded. A fiddler never stopped playing for hornpipe dancers, and unlimited quantities of grog and tobacco were on hand. This was nothing more than a nautical version of the American hobo's vision of the Big Rock Candy Mountain. The 18th century soldier had a more prosaic view of utopian happiness. From all along marches on rainy days and from stoppages out of our pay, and from the washerwoman's bills on our clothes, good Lord deliver us. From mounting guard when the snow lies deep, and from standing sentry when others sleep, and from barrack beds where lice and bugs do creep, good Lord, deliver us. And from all bridewell cages and black holes, and officers' canes with their halberd poles, and the nine-tailed cat that oppresses our souls, good Lord, deliver us. Such utopian visions were simply an escape from hard times. They were dreams of future ease and happiness, unlikely ever to be achieved. It was about longing for, not working towards. There was no vision that beckoned, no incentive to search and progress, no charitable concerns. All of these imitators offered nothing more than an escape from a hard life. None offered the challenge to improve oneself and so move society forward. This was very much at odds with the vision of Reverend Dr. Dodd, who in 1845 described Masonry as an institution founded on eternal reason and truth, whose deep basis is the civilization of mankind. For the Reverend gentleman, a Masonic utopia would be achieved when? The mournful investigation of a brother's wants, pleading pity, melts the eye, and generous compassion swells the feeling breast, while amidst the cheerful exertions of inoffensive mirth, of heart enlarging friendly communication, reflection shall be enabled to look back with pleasure and impartial conscience, shall find nothing to disapprove. what did appear to happen during this period of evolution was that a distinction between spiritual and material became apparent. This is not to suggest that there were no material benefits to be derived from Freemasonry. Networking must have offered some rewards, but rather it is possessed a higher vision than that possessed by imitators. By stressing equality to eliminate sources of envy and disharmony, by excluding women, by shunning religious and sectarian debate, the Victorian Mason came close to achieving the vision of de Foigny and the world of Barrett Bacon's Bensalemites. Modern writers on utopia divide between schools of thought represented by thinkers like the physicist Freeman John Dyson and dreamers like Richard Jefferies. Dyson envisions a universe dominated and populated by man, the characteristic scenario of much science fiction. In this vision, he postulates the presumed benefits of human society, shorn of its failings, filling the universe with light. Essentially, this appears to be a reworking of the ideas of Francis Bacon, as advanced in New Atlantis. Surely, only Freemasonry has the philosophical wherewithal to sustain this vision. The alternative is that advanced by thinkers influenced by the writings of Richard Jefferies. The skill of Jefferies in depicting the beauties of the natural and rural world fostered a school of utopians whose thought a wild, beautiful green utopia in which man was a blemish on the face of the earth was a consideration. While Jefferies was a writer on natural history of some merit, it is difficult to believe that what his followers advocate as a green utopia is what Jefferies would have subscribed to. His After London argues against his own attributed theses insofar as it postulates a world in which nature, far from existing as an idyllic greenness, is red in tooth and claw and dominates a tangled wilderness. The subsequent resettlement of which is broadly an account of the early historical geography of our island. In a sense, the initial essay After London is joined to a sequel, Wild England, which comes a form of science fiction novel based on ideas that are poorly thought through but well written. This is a strangely confused view for a naturalist. If it was ever intended as a serious view and begs the philosophical question, and if no man is there to perceive it, how can we know it exists? And even if it does, will it have a point? Is this wilderness view of utopia any more than the quest for a mythical golden age, which once may have been and which started with Hesiod and was hinted at by Preston? History teaches otherwise. Is it possible to argue that the vision which drove the earliest speculatives with their quest for the pathway to perfection and a perfect world has now faded, leaving each Mason to find his own utopia within the tenets and guiding principles of the craft? The challenge is to see beyond the tenure of an office and the quest for promotion, and to embrace Freemasonry as a code by which to live. The true Mason is asking to look into his own soul and measure himself against promises made to himself at the various stages of his Masonic career. Do that, and a personal utopia beckons. If enough Masons do it, a brighter future is possible. Subscribe to the view that Masonry is nothing if it is not visible in our lives and work. strive to make it so, and the dream of a Masonic utopia might become a reality. There is little doubt that living by Freemasonry's moral code carries the individual a long way toward the realization of a personal utopia. Perhaps that is the best we can hope for. Although an evening spent in lodge among like-minded Masons can offer a tantalizing prospect of what could be. Similarly, it is possible to observe the transformation that the Masonic experience can achieve in individuals, and know that the craft still has much to offer the individual and society. Man. Freemasonry as a search for your personal utopia. What's to say? As you reflect on it, ask yourself that question. Is that what we have? Now, you can only imagine that what the writer is suggesting to us is pointing out a need to believe in the code of Freemasonry and to live according to it, to live our lives according to it. And that if enough of us do that, then we will make an influence. We will have bearing. So we have to, as he says, being in a lodge with like-minded Masons is tantalizing. Doesn't say it's necessarily fulfilling. Say having that slight whiff of a rose and thinking of better times that rose represents. Tantalizing. That first taste of the wine and finding that it's just delicious. The smell of a good cup of coffee, just to your liking. Or the iciness of a glass of spring water. Tantalizing. The work, though, is for us to make connections between the ethics and ourselves, our own mind, our own being, and embrace the task of self-development. That means exactly what it says. Self-development is not group development. The group provides us with the lessons, the challenges. It's there for a reason. Not an excuse to walk around as a grumpy old bear, or to sound like a fool, or to bray like a child. Not an excuse to operate like a pack, but for the development of insight, knowing that there are always consequences, knowing that what we see around us is in a constant state of flux, constantly changing, ever moving, and that at best, when we claim to know what we're talking about, it's a guess. So at least make the guess based on ethics. And always give that benefit of the doubt to the next one. Masonic exchange. Come and exchange ideas. I'll see you next Sunday. I'll be here next Sunday. I hope you will be. And the program is archived. You can pull it up anytime you need. Now, as we usually do, it's a time for a little bit of music. I love that part of it. And I'm thinking that I should start with the show with a bit of music and end it with a bit of music. Just as I talked about on New Year's Day. When I asked what have we done with the music? We've chased it out of lodges. And there's no reason that we've done this. I think it's unconscionable. Because that was what helped pull us all together in a way that was prescient. It was brilliant. Only now, with neurology and psychiatry working together, we're able to understand what goes on in the human mind when we're listening to music. Just like that. All the gold which is under or upon the earth is not enough to give in exchange for virtue. The man who makes everything that leads to happiness depends upon himself and not upon other men, has adopted the very best plan for living happily. This is the man of moderation, the man of manly character and of wisdom. People are like dirt. They can either nourish you and help you grow as a person, or they can stunt your growth and make you wilt and die. I leave you a little saying from our friend Plato, who keeps speaking to us from the 5th century BC. Opinion is the medium between knowledge and ignorance. Oh my. But then the old fellow also said he was a wise man who invented beer. Here, old boy. Here's a little music from Brother Duke Ellington. This time he's sitting down with John Coltrane. And this is a song called In a Sentimental Mood. It sort of fits the atmosphere around here right now. Wish you all the best. Thank you for supporting now the new and revised Masonic Exchange. And I look forward to seeing you again, talking to you soon in Lodge.
Thank you.